All right, it is recording.
Hello. I would like to call the October 12th, 2017 meeting, regular meeting and public hearing for the North Bend Planning Commission to order. And it is about 7:01. Today we have David Miller with us. Hey, I'm working on the names, our new community development director, as well as Mike McCarty, one of our senior planners, who's going to be helping us a bit. The first thing is to do a roll call. And I'm going to go just around the table. Scott Culler?
Here.
Mary Miller?
Here.
Jim Lucky?
Yes.
Dick Ryan?
Here.
And I'm Elizabeth Gildersleeve, Gary Fancher, and Curtis Montrap have been excused from tonight's meeting by prior arrangement. The purpose of tonight's meeting is to discuss proposed amendments to the North Bend Municipal Code Chapter 18.11, Cottage Residential. And I think I've already reminded everyone that I see you were all sitting here when I asked about the sign-in. This meeting is being recorded, and that recording and minutes will be available on the North Bend City website. The next portion is to review and approve the agenda. Are there any additions?
Move the agenda be accepted as submitted.
Moved by Mr. Ryan and second by Mr. Lucky. All in favor?
Aye.
So unanimous on that. And then if we move on to taking a look at our minutes for the September 28th, 2017 meeting of the Planning Commission. Are there any corrections or comments from the commission?
Accepted as submitted.
Moved by Mr. Ryan. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Mr. Lucky.
Thanks, Tom.
Yes. Wonderful as always. And do I have motion to approve? All in favor of the motion. Thank you, Dick. Is that
aye?
So unanimous on that as well. Then the next step would be any public comment on non-agenda items. So that would be something not on the agenda for this evening. Any comments from the public for something not on tonight's agenda?
Yes.
Can I get your name and address?
Sure. Michael Thomas, 1231 LaForest Drive, SC North Bend. I wanted to reiterate from last city council meeting, also a point that another citizen made on knowing the status of our sewer plant capacity and improvements. I personally would like to see a presentation from the city, either in Planning Commission or at City Council, to know, you know, where do we stand on the sewer plant, its total capacity, and as well as, you know, any of its interim limits, like bioavailable oxygen, the amount of total solid discharge. We're going through a lot of improvements where a lot of money is being spent, and I see it on every City Council agenda. Certainly, I think we're apt to hit some interim limits before we hit the maximum capacity, which is around 4,600 ERU. I'd like to understand a roadmap of where we are with our sewer plant improvements and when those things come in, because I think that's important for us to know as to, you know, what levels of development we can support within the city responsibly, and when we get beyond those limits, which I think is a very fair question to ask. We're also approaching, like, for example, in our winter, our I&I period, which is the infiltration and inflow, which is our rainy period where sewer flows in from all the rain, et cetera, and there are leaky pipes. And we are actually getting very close to no longer meeting our fecal coliform limits, even with the existing UV numbers that are there. And I've talked about this at Planning Commission before. So, again, knowing when things are being addressed in our sewer plant improvements, and I know there's a draft plan being submitted and the plant will be re-permitted this December. And I know there's an existing plan, a lot of things are in progress, but I think it would be important to know our roadmap. You know, where are we in terms of our total capacity? What are the limits that we're going to hit in the meantime? And when do we address those things? The other thing is as I look at our growth, and I think it's around maybe 11,000 residents or 4,600 ERU, we're also adding a lot of business connections. So with the city council approving the the incentives for, you know, no GSTs, which I somewhat oppose, but let's just say we have a lot of business growth. That doesn't count population, but it is sewer capacity. So we have to keep an eye on this very carefully. I'm also curious as to when we need a second sewer plant. I've seen some references around 2026. So when do we need to start planning for that, or is it even feasible? So as we start thinking about 2018, perhaps, you know, changes in our UGA or growth management, that thing, we need to think about where's the next one going to go, or if there is even a second one even possible. The other thing is I also feel that there's some limits that are inaddressable, like temperature. So with temperature rise, global warming, you know, that's a very difficult problem to solve. So there may be some constraints that we may hit. And I would just like to hear, you know, some where we stand on the sewer plant, where do we stand on the improvements, when are certain limits going to be addressed and hit, and whether it's planning commission or city council or some other meeting, I think it's owed to our citizens given the amount of money we're spending on sewer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Any other comments on a non-agenda item? So we'll move ahead to staff. We'll read this a bit on the topic at hand and give an introduction.
Yeah, I think our community development director, David Miller, wanted to provide just some broader word introduction before I get more specifically into the proposed regulations.
And actually, what I'd really like to do is compliment you on the work that you did at your last meeting. We are able now to send the wireless regulations up to the city council and the overlay regulations up to the city council. And given the time that this has been on the docket and how difficult it's been to get through it, I think you've really, really knocked over some major goals that you've had for quite some time. And wanted to report to you that the city council at their budget meeting this week approved the position for GIS and long-range planning so that we could have some help in getting these 32 legislative items that are on the list that we gave to you out of the way and moving along. And we want to accept any criticisms or constructive comments from you on how we can present these things a little more coherently to help you get through them. And we really want to focus on the progress that you're making and keep that momentum up. So tonight, Mike is a very good presentation on the cottage issue. I think we can take that forward. And I think you can look forward to each month having one or two of these major legislative items coming before you and having some good analysis and some good critical thinking on your part to be able to take this forward to the council. And I want to compliment you on what you've gotten through, because I just today reread all of the wireless information, and that is mind-boggling, to say the least, for us and for you. So kudos to you, and hopefully we can keep this forward momentum going. And I'm going to continue to try to push through. You know, we have a lot of development going on as well as these legislative items, and it's important that we address those and address the issues that we think are important so that the proper regulations and the proper standards are in place when this development comes forward. So kudos to you for doing such a good job, and hopefully we'll knock another domino over tonight and move forward with the cottage regulations. I just wanted to tell you, you're doing a great job there. This is my eighth city I've worked for. I'm a lot older than I look, and this commission is really getting through this information well. So I want to compliment you on that and encourage you to continue to focus and move ahead and get these things off of our docket and moving forward. Thanks.
I'm sure.
Yes.
May I respond?
Absolutely.
I'd like to turn the tables on you a bit, David. I want to say to the commission, I feel much different. Wind in the planning staff. I think that the leadership is a different dynamic, and I see this field a different tone elevated coming from the staff is under your guidance. Mr. Miller, I do appreciate you being here at the proper moment. Mr. Thomas is talking about all this and what we're doing. We need to be thinking about these things far in advance so we can address them before we get out of hand. I think you're just the fellow to help us do that.
Well, we share a lot of the concerns that Mr. Thomas is talking about. And we're working very closely with the Public Works people on this. And I'm fortunate enough to have been a Public Works director in a number of communities. And I really do sympathize with the struggles that you have with infrastructure and trying to keep up with it. This is a really critical time in the history of the city. And I appreciate your support. And we've got a crackerjack staff here, I'll tell you, just really excellent.
Okay, so
thank you.
Right, yeah, well, I will provide an introduction. So I'm Mike Cardi. I'm a senior planner with the City of North Bend. And wanted to just give you guys a bit of a background on where the cottage regulations are coming from, where we're at today, and walk you a little bit through the draft before we open up the hearing. So I inherited this from our prior community development director, who was working with the Planning Commission on this back in March. She departed for another position, and so it's been quite a while. So we actually had a public hearing back then, but because it's been a long time and because we have some additional amendments that we want to take a look at, wanted to open that back up to the public. So just wanted to first thank you very much for coming. I know you guys are concerned about your neighborhoods, you're concerned about our community. Staff is too. I love this place, and I love development, and I love making community, and that's why I'm a planner. So wanted to thank you again. We want to hear your concerns, we want to hear your comments, and we'll take those into, the Planning Commission will take those into serious consideration as we move through the draft. So for a bit of background, if you look behind you on the map, that's our zoning map, and you look at the orange color on the map, that is our cottage zone. So our cottage zone was established roughly 10 years ago, and at the time it was created as an alternative, for an alternative to conventional single-family homes, which is really important as people age, as we have changing demographics in society. There's less need over time for conventional large single-family homes, and the council at the time wanted to look at that and also see other ways to get affordable housing that's alternative to single-family or multifamily, and this was considered an innovative way to do that. Then, about 5 years ago, in the peak of the recession, we heard from a number of developers in the area that the cottage regulations, developers and property owners within the cottage zone, that the cottage regulations were not developable, that based on the criteria for size of cottages and a number of other factors, they said, we can't do this, it doesn't pencil. And so we took that through the public process at the time, and there were some proposals to increase the size of cottage homes. Again, that was a market reaction to what was happening during the recession. Through the public process, the council approved increasing the size of cottage homes up to 1,700 square feet. And so that is the cottage regulations that are in place at this time. We, since that time, we had two developments that I think you're familiar with that happened in cottage zoning. So one of them is on Cedar Falls Way at the cottage at North Bend, and then also the Ranger Station cottages on Thrasher Avenue. And as those were developed, the public and the city council, hearing comments from the public and looking back at our vision, really saw that those were not in keeping with what the original vision for cottages were. So those were larger than, they look like conventional single-family homes. And the layout of the neighborhood looks like a conventional single-family neighborhood. So given that, and then also with the concern about, if you look at the amount of area within that cottage zone, seeing a lot of that, essentially just high-density single-family, could look pretty monotonous and could have an impact on adjacent residences. So the council in February of 2016 established a moratorium on accepting cottage development applications. So we were going to stop, keep people from submitting and vesting to the current regulations to give staff and the Planning Commission and the public time to look at our existing regulations and find out what amendments do we need to make to bring it back to the original vision for cottages. The council worked with staff at that time through a number of work studies and council committee meetings to take a look at what other cities were doing with cottages. And ultimately, they came to the Kirkland cottage model. Kirkland, City Kirkland worked with a cottage company to develop cottage regulations, which are more along the lines of what the original idea for cottages were. Very small homes centered around a common green in small clusters, not a wholesale subdivision. And so that the council gave direction as that would be the good starting point. The difference, though, is that the Kirkland cottage regulations are based on the infill model. So they allow it throughout their single family, some of their single family zones. And it's intended that it's a small infill here and there, not just wholesale, everybody can do this. If you begin to look at the map, we've got a cottage zone. So seeing everything like that could again be monotonous, even if they're the smaller cottages. So what the approach then would be to have a hybrid model to allow cottages, but also to try to mix in some standard size single family development within that to keep it a little bit more diverse, make it feel a little more blended with the single family neighborhoods to the south. So again, the Planning Commission started on that back in March. Our community development director left for another position in June. And so given that and given the huge amount of development review that we're doing right now, we had to put it aside for a little bit, so we're just now coming back to it. But we do want to work with the Planning Commission over the next couple of meetings to hopefully come to a recommendation. So what the draft includes, I wanted to get into that a little bit. So it applies in three zones. It applies throughout that cottage zone, the orange zone that you see there. Get on my computer here. And then it also applies in our downtown commercial zone, which is what you see in the red. So you could develop a cottage development within that zone. And I'm trying to get to my the radius, the 10-minute walk zone radius from the downtown commercial zone. My computer's taking a really long time to load. Not that one. So this is a really terrible map, and we need to update it. But I wasn't going to spend time updating it until we had direction from the Planning Commission about how they wanted to address this. So again, I apologize. This is hard to see. But what you see in the full color is a 5-minute walk radius from the downtown. The light shading is the 10-minute walk radius.
Could you just point that out?
Yeah. So this boundary right here is that 10-minute walk radius. And what this is this is a reduction in the area that cottages are currently allowed in. So right now, under our planned neighborhood development regulations, cottages are allowed throughout the single-family zone. I think that's maybe something that not everybody is aware of. So a development can submit up to 15% of its homes as cottages currently. So what this is proposing is to reduce that to only be within 10 minutes, a 10-minute walk from downtown, which is one of the purposes of a cottage. You want to have that connection to services and more of the urban lifestyle that people that live in cottages seek. So those are the three areas that these development regulations apply to. The regulations propose to have a mix of cottages and some other typologies as well. And those other typologies include, I'm going to go onto a website to show some images of these. So if you want to look further into this, the website missingmiddle.com or missingmiddlehousing.com provides a description of kind of what this is intended to get at. It's not single family, it's not full-on multifamily, but there's a lot of in-between product that is really not well represented in the market. And among these are two additional housing types that we want to include or that the Planning Commission is considering including. In the cottage zone. And go to okay, so here are different types of housing within the missing middle. One of them, what we have described as two-unit houses, which is a little bit different from a duplex. And in here, they're just talking about it as duplexes. But what the idea is this is a smaller unit, 2,000 square foot maximum, that looks like a conventional single family home. So it's two units, but that's where it differs from a duplex. A duplex can be just a side-by-side mirror image joined at the hip type of structure.
Going back to that top one on the left, that looks like a Spanish influence.
Yeah.
What's different is that the doorway on the left is arched and the doorway on the right is cubed.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it is side by side. It's interesting.
It's So a lot of these are side by side, but like this one, for example, that looks like a conventional single family home. And that's the idea of what these would be. And they're, again, limited to 2,000 square foot total for both units. So the idea there is that it's not dominating the rest of the cottage development. It's harmonious with it. The other one would be carriage units. Let's see if I can close this thing here. Bear with me for a second here. So the other type is a carriage unit, which is essentially just a house above a garage. And this fits well with cottage developments because the cottage developments often include a bay of garages. And so this is a way to keep it from looking just like a bay of garages. It has a little bit more character, and it's an efficient use of space without adding a lot of visual clutter. So
we're seeing that in the forest service units, aren't we?
No, they don't have that there. So there are a number of cottage or carriage houses in Issaquah Highlands. So even among the multifamily there, within the garage bays, you'll see something pop up that's a residence above that. So it's just another innovative way to provide a very small unit that provides additional affordability or a different typology than your conventional garden apartments or something. And this could blend well with cottage housing. So then the third component of what would be allowed within the cottage zone would just be standard single family. So again, we talked about wanting diversity within the zone. Currently, the regulations would allow everything to be cottage within that zone. And if you look at this, what this is showing is the separation requirements. So in our code, what we're proposing is that you can have a maximum up to 12 cottage units around a common green. And then if you want, you can go up to 24 units total within your development. If you're doing that 24 units, you have to do two cottage clusters. So an example, two cottage clusters separated by an open space. Each of these have their own green, but they're also separated by, I believe it's a 30-foot buffer. You also cannot just do all cottage. So if you want to do if you want to do more than 24, you're going to have to separate it by standard single family. So standard single family clusters of up to 20, then additional cottage clusters. So it's breaking it up. Along Silson, the recommendation is only single family to preserve the character along there. And then in addition, buffering requirements. So along the southern portion, along Cedar Falls Way, the recommendation is for a 30-foot forested buffer to keep it from just looking kind of immediately on top of the road. And that forested buffer would have an 8-foot paved pathway that would meander through the trees as opposed to a conventional curb and gutter and sidewalk, which has a more urban feel. This preserves more of the rural feel that we've heard many times is central to the city's identity. Densities, so cottage housing would be limited up to 1,200 or 1,500 square feet. Planning Commission, I don't know if we have a final recommendation on that yet. And then up to 10 units per acre within the cottage residential zone. That's not changing, that's already in the regulations. And only up to 8 units per acre in the low-density residential zone. Standard-sized single-family homes, which you see in the yellow area there, that would be just up to 4 units per acre, which is consistent with the low-density residential zone we have. That's pretty much the summary. So again, we really want to take your comments and consider those as we move through the regulations. So back to you.
Questions for
thanks for bringing it back, yeah. Mike. I have a question, Mike. You're talking about a friend and I've got a discussion, you start talking about mixing cottage and carriage. same, 12 the same, 12 the same.
So a cluster of 12, and then within that cluster, you can, in the regulations, you could have up to one two-unit house and one carriage unit, but the rest would be cottages.
All right, I'm still seeing more of a uniform complex. If I'm looking at 20 living units, I'm seeing 24 the same, four of them.
The bigger differentiation is the orange versus the yellow there. So the orange being cottage clusters, the yellow being single family. This is just a hypothetical. This is intended to illustrate the concept. It doesn't mean that if you have that parcel, that's how you have to develop that property.
But what we're seeing, when these historical floor graphs you found, what you're seeing in a city block is a lot more separation, a lot more dissimilar units together.
Mm-hmm.
You're not seeing the effect of having a suburban cookie cutter approach. It's all variable.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't see that happening here.
So that's a discussion that the Planning Commission could have
tonight. And I think that will be part of what we talk about as we go through the chapter. So what we'd like to do now is open our public hearing. And grab a question.
Did you receive my public comment?
I did, yeah. Actually, I should mention that. So I'm going to pass these around to the Planning Commission. We received comments from Michael Thomas, from Rob McFarland, from John Day Holmes, and then also from resident Ty Allen. So those are going around.
To read what the changes were going to be to the zoning and whatnot, but it hurt my head and I couldn't get it. So the reason that I'm really here is to try to figure out whether, in one of the reasons I bought in Silver Creek was because my house is a small house. It's smaller than cottage. Thank you very much. I'm not sure what that makes me, but it's on a big lot. It's on a quarter acre. And I don't live within 10 feet of my neighbor, and that's what I like. I never want to live within 10 feet of my neighbor. These homes that are crowded together, like the cottages in North Bend, I drove by that the other day, and I just go, wow, I don't get that. So I want to know whether this is going to affect the density in Silver Creek, whether somebody can sell their property and then put, you know, four units on a half an acre. Or what I'm understanding here is that this is now 10 cottage units on an acre. Is that right?
No. Let me take all your questions, and then if the Planning Commission wishes,
so
I can respond to each in turn.
Okay.
We'll
collect the questions. I'm confused about the density for the cottages in the Silver Creek area and the yellow area over there, and what that might mean to me as far as the lot next door to me that's half vacant, or the lot across from me that is not built on, and I'm not even sure it is buildable. You know, stuff like that. Is this going to make it possible for people to build another dwelling in their backyard, like we see happening in Seattle, where people are putting in, you know, houses there in their backyards and, you know, just creating this massive density there? I don't want that. So that's what I'm trying, that's what I'm here for, is to try to figure out how this affects me personally, basically, and the neighborhood of Silver Creek.
Thank you for coming. And Michael
sure.
Thomas.
Yeah, Michael Thomas, 1231 La Forest Drive, SE. I'm going to summarize a little bit of my comments as well as just some add some new things. So that based on some of the discussion and presentation made by Mike, which was actually quite excellent. I'd really like to understand a little bit about the timeline for adopting these. You know, what's our sort of time frame for undertaking these? I know there's an existing moratorium. I just want to understand, you know, the time this is going to take, because there's existing standards in play, as well as there were things in the past that weren't in play too, like diversity, and there's some discussions that I had seen. So I'm not certain if this is a replacement for, or how that affected the ones that were already in progress. So it was, to me, it's unclear as to, you know, how the existing standards will continue to apply, as well as what's the time frame for adopting these new standards, because it's quite confusing. It applies to quite a few different zones within the city. My real concern, just as a brief summary, is this density is really out of line with what's the line SEC or Falls Way. That is all residential and significantly fewer than 4 homes per acre. So this immediately fails on its face to be compatible with the character of that existing neighborhood. I just don't see how you reconcile that as an item. Even La Forest is, you know, probably 1.75 homes per acre, because our standards include the roads, which is kind of obscene when we actually look at our development standards. It's 4 homes per acre, including the roads for LDR. So that's not 4 homes per acre, that's like 5 homes per acre when you start including the roads. I'm on a true half acre lot. So it's kind of interesting. When I really look at this, a couple things I really would like to ask for a bigger buffer along SEC Cedar Falls Way. And I've repeatedly said this at Planning Commission and City Council 2 times. I know we're saying it's a 30-foot buffer along sort of the cottage residential zone. I think 50 or 45 is more in line. I mean, La Forest preserves its trees within 50 feet of the road of Cedar Falls Way. Cedar Falls itself has a huge buffer at the entrance, probably 30 feet. There's some great examples of a brand new home that went in on Cedar Falls Way that actually they preserved the trees. So I would like to also see a part of this actually is stronger tree preservation, 5-star builds. I'm sick of seeing denuding in our town. It's possible to build homes and leave the trees. Quit clear cutting, quit raising the neighborhoods. Again, great example is of a home that went out on Cedar Falls Way. They kept trees within 10 feet of that home. So this is something that's going to be 5-star built. It's going to be expensive. But if we want to preserve our trees, we need to get serious about it. We just need to start thinking about this. The other thing is when I think about the road standards along Cedar Falls Way, I'm very concerned about that increase in roadway width. It's going to cause flooding. It's about a mile-long stretch of another 15 feet of impervious surface area, including the sidewalks and the road. That's some serious flood. Both the north and south sides have residential. So this is a major problem with this whole proposal along SEC Cedar Falls Way, is that the flooding, either on the north or south, you've got La Forest, Cedar Falls, a bunch of smaller single-family residential, that's all along the south side of Cedar Falls Way that is at risk for this. The north side has 4 existing homes that could easily be flooded. I just don't see it as feasible, that roadway standard. And I recognize it was adopted. And I also see code changes here that don't match the code that was adopted. There's some problems with north and south in the original code, which I brought up during City Council. And this is being propagated here. And the diagram in this does not match the diagram that's on the city website. So if you're going to change things in this, please keep aware. And that's why I include what I download from the website as part of my comment. I know it's unusual, but I've seen it happen before. Please consider your documents when you put them on the website to be controlled. Don't change them before when you ask for public input. Consider them frozen from when you ask for input and have a public hearing. It's not right. That's not the way to conduct business. The industry I work in, you get thrown out of committees for doing this. Not right. Don't do it. Now, the other thing is I think the traffic distribution needs to be looked at. I'd like to see connections along North Bend Way. I think it's unreasonable to expect a lot of traffic along Cedar Falls Way to only be along Cedar Falls Way. Consider cutting across the 40-foot buffer. You're forcing a whole bunch of traffic on the SEC or Causeway. The other thing I'm concerned about is...
And if you could wrap up. You've hit your time, but okay. I want you to
wrap
up.
I'm almost done. A couple things is there's really a lack of open spaces and parks. I mean, I'm very concerned about there's no big open spaces or parks within here. There's no accessible open park in this area of town. There's nothing there. Ofsted is not a park. It is the school. So that's one of the things I would really like to ask is, what's our plan for a park in this area? What's also the pedestrian traffic going to be like in this area? What are the schools intended for, particularly along Cedar Falls Way? And I think more parking is needed. I think we need to add at least one more parking space per unit. Thanks.
Thank you. And we had a few questions if you wanted to answer.
Yeah, I'd be happy. If you want to pause now, I can answer those questions and then see if there's others.
Were there any other comments, people that would want to make comments that are here with us?
All right, yeah. I'll go back and see how I can address some of those questions. So, Virginia's questions about density in Cedar Falls. Silver Creek, yeah. The existing density that's allowed there is 4 units per acre. So that's what you'd see if you look at a number of the new developments throughout town. Those would be developed around 4 units per acre threshold. So that's what could be developed in your area. As far as cottages, they're allowed to be up to 8 units per acre in a cottage cluster within that 10-minute walk radius. So you could see an additional density within one of those clusters, but there's a limitation of 12 units in any one cottage development within the low-density residential zone, so just 12, and then those have to be at least 500 feet from any other cottage development. So
it's can I clarify something as well, because I think it will speak to one of her concerns,
mm-hmm.
setbacks from adjacent lots, because I think that was one of the things she expressed specifically was the homes right on top of each other.
Setbacks from the exterior property lines. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me go into the regulations to see what that was.
I don't think it was framed specifically as a question, but it was one of the items that she mentioned.
Like, what's our minimum lot size to be able to do a cottage? How much space do you need to put the 12 together?
Let me deal with one at a time. Let me look for that. Otherwise, my brain's going to get scrambled. David, let me know if you see that before I see it. Okay, here it is. Setbacks from exterior property lines. So it can be 10 feet from a property line, 20 feet in the front. That's what's in the current regulation.
And those are fairly typical for the minimums for single family homes as well.
I'm sure it is, but yeah. I wouldn't get there if somebody was.
I think it's important to say in this that what we deal with here in zoning districts is the maximum that people can build to. Say, for instance, in your neighborhood, if you have, in general, a lower density and somebody wants to take advantage of the housing type, but they want to have more room, they want more separation, more distance as a personal choice. They don't have to build at the maximum density. They can do that. It's up to their choice.
Sure.
And the idea, I think, I share a lot of your comments, and I know the council does well, in looking at the loss of trees and looking at the amount of property that's taken up for flood control and best practices for dealing with stormwater. When you get done with all of that, you move into an area like Rock to the Pulte Homes and look. There's not a lot of tree cover, and you end up with a situation where you say, gee whiz, we want to make it look better than this. One of the things that we're trying to do in these developments is to try to master plan when they go in terms of the quality of the architecture, and in terms of the common open space that they're centered around. Now understand that we all may live in a lesser density and prefer it personally, but there are a lot of folks today in the housing markets throughout the United States, and particularly on the West Coast, where people are older and don't want a large piece of property to take care of, and they don't want the maintenance that an older piece of property has. and you have a lot of people that are entering the housing market that can't afford the larger units. So there is a particular market sector that this is looking at. And if, to my way of thinking, if you do maintain these green spaces in between them, and those are the areas where you maintain tree cover and tree separation and some kind of a feeling that you're not just backed up against another subdivision, but you do have the separation with natural foliage, and you have a common area to focus around. And you'll notice if you go onto the cottage company's site, some of these developments, not only do they really concentrate on high-level architecture, they quite often will have a common area indoors where they can have parties for their kids or social activities or things like that. So this is a lifestyle that certain people at a certain point in their life, whether they're entering the housing market or they're leaving the housing market and don't want a lot of property to take care of, are looking for. So we're not looking to wholesale change the character of the community, but we're looking at folks that are looking at a certain type of housing to accommodate their need. And how do you do that in a community like North Bend, where you want to preserve a lot of the natural foliage in these separation areas between the subdivisions, and you want to concentrate more on things like tree preservation? And I can tell you from one of the things that's on our list of ordinances to update and deal with is the tree ordinance. And one of the things that I personally have taken an interest in since I've been here is making sure we implement the ordinance we have now. And we're coming down a little more heavily on people who are not respecting trees, whether it's the root barrier, the root level, or other things that, in development, where you can develop next to a tree area and destroy trees that are in that forest next to you. So we're involving arborists much more and much more enforcement on making sure that we take care of the trees in the areas where we can protect them. So what you're going to see is, yes, you're going to see some differences in density and community that serve a different need than perhaps you personally have. But we want to do that in the context of not destroying the character of the community. It's a challenge, but at the same time, some of these comments you're giving us in terms of setbacks or areas where you leave that natural foliage are important in developing the ordinance. And we're sensitive to them, and we'd like to see those things incorporated. But you do have an opportunity for a greater density for people who want a lifestyle, where they don't want to take care of a big yard, and they don't want to take care of an older home that takes a lot of maintenance, and they want some sense of a community within that development. And that's why we'd like to see these common areas where you have defensible open space where people can interact together as part of the community. So that there are some benefits to that lifestyle that may not be our personal choice. I personally don't choose that, but I know a lot of people do. And I've been in communities, other communities, that there have been a very, very strong demonstrated need by folks who don't want a large home to take care of anymore and want a different lifestyle, but still want to have the social interaction. So I think we have to provide for the opportunity for both kinds of lifestyle that we're talking about.
If I can add one thing, I think your concern is the perception of density around you. And there's a lot of factors that play into the perception of density that are different than just the pure density of how many units per acre are there. And a cottage product actually can, it might even have a lower perception of density than a conventional single-family development. Because if you put, developers are going to maximize the buildable space. And so you'll see, like with the new Pulte development, River Glen, those are very large homes, not very large lots. And they take full advantage of the height limit and the bulk. And so they're kind of imposing on the street. A cottage product, on the other hand, has got a much lower height limit, a much lower size of the unit. So even though there may be more units from the perception of the street or a neighboring property, it's not going to feel quite as over the top of the property line is.
Once it's built, like I visualize the tree is actually growing and actually adding more views that you're not getting. You won't hit the roof lines as much, you'll get trees more than that over time. But when they're brand new, they all look the same. It all look like cookie cutter complexes. But I think once vegetation takes over, like this visual here, that's not a pocket park. That's clearly a long area for recreating, for youngsters and oldsters. There's plenty of walk here, people relax in. So that's a comfortable living environment to my to my eye. But I was wondering, a different subject, Frank, I'm sure you thought of it. I'd love to have your view on turning the Cedar Falls into a one-way road.
No. You did that once.
I heard that was done once. I don't like that idea at all. Now that this is the second time this has been tabled. No. I'm not with it at all.
When did you hear the last? When was the last road?
It was actually discussed in Planning Commission as a side comment, as well as I think you spoke to someone in Salon that there was a thought about turning it into one way.
If you're talking about adding more or going with Cedar Falls, didn't I hear you say that?
Yeah, I don't want to see that happen, actually. I think there's major problems with that. There's a desire to add a center's left turn lane.
But if that's necessary for public safety, like, it would be dumb. But if it's not needed because it's a one-way road, wouldn't that be a compromise?
The other way would be to go with different sidewalks. I mean, I don't like the idea of it being one-way. It's definitely been, at least as long as I've been here, it's been two-way. One of the compromises I did put forward was perhaps only put the left turn lanes where they're needed as a way to preserve more of the existing trees. I'd really like to see that. But anyway, that's...
So let me get back to the questions that were raised. So, Michael, I think you'd asked a number of questions. Timeline for adopting. Our intent is to get through the moratorium or get out of the moratorium as quickly as possible while addressing the concerns of the public and the Planning Commission. This was adopted originally back in February 2016, so we're almost going in two years, and that's a dangerous situation to be in. So if the city continues to renew a moratorium, that's... A property owner could sue for just inappropriate delay of adopting regulations. So, if they wanted to proceed with a development proposal, you had asked about the relationship to the existing regulations. So, what this is doing is this replaces two different sections of code that we have. The first one is our cottage performance standards. We have those in 1810.050. And that's where it's describing the existing size limits and the existing mix and standards. This replaces that, and this also replaces that planned neighborhood development section of our code, which is the existing 18.12. And that's the one that allows cottages anywhere within the low-density residential zone up to 15% of the units. You had talked about the density... concerns about the density to adjacent single family in Cedar Falls. This is actually going to wind up probably with lower density than what the current regulations would allow because of that mix, the separation requirements and the mix of single family, conventional size single family up to 4 units per acre together with the up to 10 units per acre for cottages within that area of the zone. You talked about tree preservation. Tree preservation is definitely a comment that we've heard over and over from the community, and we do want to address that. We have a separate tree code section that applies not just in the cottage zone, but throughout the city. And that's one of the next priorities that we want to take a look at is open up that code, bring it to the Planning Commission, and look at what are the reductions allowed and what are the preservation requirements for how many trees that you have to preserve in your property. The cottage development that was developed on Cedar Falls was allowed a reduction under the code down to 20%. You're required to retain 30% unless you can show for various things that preserving that amount of trees is not feasible. What this particular draft says is you can't use that reduction anymore at all in the cottage zone. And we may be looking at getting rid of that reduction citywide as well. And so that's another concern, but that's not the... We're not going to be addressing that entirely in this because it's not the right tool for the job. We want to address the tree regulations that apply citywide. The flooding concerns, just briefly on that, any development that occurs in the city has to comply with the city's stormwater regulations. We've adopted the 2009 King County Surface Water Design Manual, and it's got pretty stringent controls about not being able to impact off-site drainage. So you have to show that you can take in the stormwater that comes onto your site and address it without creating problems for others. Do you want to take a follow-up question?
I think that I saw...
I guess the comment was, you know, in addition to the density of the housing, this whole thing requires an improvement to Cedar Falls Way and probably North End Way as well. So my concern about flooding also applies to the road on which this depends.
Okay, yeah. So the road, and this was hard to see in the graph because just the way that track changes works, but the road standard that you see in there was the previous version. You mentioned there was a correction. We're not even going to include that in the draft because we're addressing that separately in our street standards. So again, the right tool for the job, we don't want to be addressing street standards and the cottage regulations. So that was addressed in the street standards to provide the road standard on Cedar Falls Way.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Ryan.
Touch what you're just saying now, Mike, about density. Mike, all jurisdictions are governed by the comprehensive plan, and we're required to match growth densities that the county has projected for us, and we've accepted. We've negotiated that, we've accepted. We will take such amount of density. Now, when we've done that, has that tied our hands into what our density per acre is because we only have so much land, or why is it that we have to have 4 DUs per acre? Why not max them out at 3 DUs? Do we have to put everything that we've obligated ourselves to take in such a constrained area?
We're not, and that's why the Planning Commission and the Council changed some of the zones in the outlying areas actually down to 2 units per acre a year and a half ago. For that very reason, that to preserve some of that rural character the further that you get out from the downtown.
But it seems like I'm making up for that by punching them in on the smaller units to still attain that carrying capacity that we've agreed to with the county. Is that right?
We're beyond our required amount that we have to accommodate, but there's other considerations that the council has to factor in. So housing affordability is a huge issue here. And the most direct factor in housing affordability is land, the cost of land. So the bigger the lots, the more expensive the homes are. And so it's a balancing.
So I'm trying to get you to answer the questions that I think is troubling Mike and his neighbors. And that is that why are we being forced to accept such a high density with smaller homes? In other words, if I want to occupy a 1,200 acre home, but I want to live on a quarter acre lot, why can't I?
You can. There's not a minimum house size. You can do as small of a house as you want on whatever size.
Well, I'm a developer, I'm not buying, but I want to buy a home that's pre-built for me. So the developer is telling you he can't do it because it doesn't pencil out.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to put 5 on a lot. If they're going to be cottages or whatever they are, why don't we say no? We want you to do 4 cottages on an acre and make it work. Is that possible, or is it just
well? It again runs into market.
It's
running against market factors. So the cost of land is often what drives what you do on it. So the bigger the lot that you allow, the builder is going to build a bigger house because they're making up for that expensive.
That's one of the things we've run into is a lot of people, particularly as they get older, and I'm in that group, would like to have a single-story home. And a lot of the people come into the model homes and they say, you know, these are great, but we'd like to have a single-story home. We don't want to be climbing upstairs. And the answer we get back from them is that you can't get the yield from the home without the square footage. In other words, if you take the top floor down, and you put it next to the first floor, you're going to have a larger lot, and that larger lot is something people aren't willing to pay for. And a lot of this is driven by economics. And you can go back as recently as 3 years ago, when the housing market was quite different than it was today, and perhaps some of those products might have worked. But we're not seeing that people are willing to pay for it.
And I think that is showing up right now, David. When you go in Issaquah, have you noticed how that apartment complex stopped dead in its tracks? South of the highway, they're going up the hill. It's just stopped. They were building like no tomorrow. I think that's showing the market's breaking against them. the houses over there on the ridge that have stopped, that, on the, that are facing Mount Si, on the ridge road going south, and that, you know, the homes, that's what's in 3 years. That would have been up in the first 6 months. So the market is slowing down for large, inexpensive homes. Those apartments are very expensive, and the homes on the ridge are very expensive, and they're not being picked up right now. It's just almost stopped. We're doing, well, they're building smaller homes out here, and they're buying them. It's like.
I would like to. I think that we're ready to move to discussion, but I wanted to give an opportunity for any of the additional members of the public with us to speak. If they have any comments before I close the public hearing and open discussion, because I think we're headed that direction. Some of the items that you touched on are definitely in my notes from going through. So you've been sitting and listening. I just want to give you an opportunity to add your comments if you have them. Did you have another question?
I do, kind of. So I'm still not exactly clear. So the discussion is for changing the density from 4 units to 8 units, but it being cottage density, not single-family home density, obviously. My question is, I guess, so if the lot of land behind me sells, which is, I think it's probably an acre, would that be up then for 8 units? You know, I mean, if a developer bought it, can somebody put 8 units on that acre that's right behind my house? Is that
they could.
That would work?
They could, but there's a limitation in the number of cottage developments that can happen in the low-density residential zone. So they have to be 500 feet away from any other cottage development. And the Planning Commission consider if that's the appropriate separation, but the cottage regulations that are proposed would allow would be up to 12 units, one cluster, no more than 500 feet from any other cottage cluster.
What about how many feet does it have to be from the houses next door?
That 10 feet, again, is the separation requirement.
Yikes.
Might clarify the density again.
Density in the low-density residential zone for cottages that are within that 10-minute walk radius is 8 per acre. Inside the cottage zone or in the downtown commercial zone would be 10 units per acre.
Okay, so for her 1 acre example, how many cottages could be built?
No more than 12, because you can only do one cluster.
No, on an acre.
Oh, on an acre?
On an acre.
So you'd have to get into the separation requirements?
She's calling out a specific, an acre of land inside LDR. How many cottages could be built?
8 maximum. But it's interesting, you know, you say that you can do 8, but we had a guy come in just the other day, and he took a look at the requirements for street dedication. He looked at the requirements for best practices for taking care of stormwater. He took a look at the fact that he personally wanted a development that did have a common area in between. When he looked at it, he said, gee whiz, I could do tiny houses here, but I can't do cottages, because by the time I get done with all the other requirements, I lose so many units that I can't do what I originally wanted. So we theoretically can look at maps and say this can happen. There are an awful lot of factors when you're responsible for all of these requirements on a piece of property that determine what your real yield is. And what I'm finding is in most cases, with treating stormwater and dedicating the right-of-way for streets and the kinds of things you have to do, the density is going to be much less than what we're looking at. Because you're talking about a gross density that could be accommodated versus the real net density you get when you lay it out and you take all of the development requirements into account. But your concern is valid. If you have a concern that if you have a single-family home on a larger lot and you want to preserve a greater separation, then you should probably be lobbying for some kind of a regulation that says when you're up against a low-density development that will remain low-density in the future, that you'd like to have a greater separation. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're hearing your comment is. And so I think that's a valid comment for us to take into account when we're looking at this.
I have one other input. Mm-hmm. Silver Creek is not on city sewer. Mm-hmm. So if they decide that they want to put cottages in there,
they have to get served, see? These are some of the realities that hit you when you're talking about the potential for density.
Sure.
You've got to treat sewage according to today's standard for a subdivision.
Right.
So that plat's got to have sewer. So there may be some natural constraints in your area that are financial, make it financially infeasible to do it in the area.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I could add one more thing, thinking I'm not a member of staff.
I keep looking for your little nameplate there.
I moved from right there.
Oh,
I couldn't see.
Very good.
But that's the piece I would hope that you take away from this.
Yeah.
The map says one thing. The probability of the highest and best of the map's allowance happening anytime in your near future is way out there.
Yeah, I understand.
And that's true, I think, I'd say, of even the area, the land that we've designated specifically, which hasn't been fine-tuned yet.
Right.
But even though we say you can build an ivory tower here, the economics and all the factors tie in, it's like it doesn't
right.
work. And the other thing I would say to leave with, realize the thing you're most afraid of that you've outlined here would make you very wealthy.
Yeah, but it's probably not going to happen on my piece of property. It's going to be the person across from me or next door to me or behind me.
I would like... I saw your hand, yes. If you could give your name and address.
Okay,
for the record,
it's David Deffenbaum. We just moved in there. Yeah. In the north end. But we have another appointment that we have to go to, my wife, Penny. And it's very, I've been in a couple meetings before, not here, but in another community I used to live in. And I just like your thought pattern here, you know. It's, you know, it's not... hostile, like some areas that I've been, but it seems like everybody's really professional here. Mike's got some good information there. He seems like he's well versed on everything, and everybody's seems like they're one big happy family. But I'm sorry we have to disrupt this meeting because we do it.
We understand. I'm not doing good at keeping to the time frame, but I wanted the conversation to continue. I thought it was productive.
Thanks for
Thank
coming.
You for coming.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you guys very much. I'll be back.
And I saw your hand, and then we'll move on to discussion because I'm about half an hour over. We try to keep to that agenda.
I just wanted to have sort of two questions. And again, if folks get back to me on those, I'd be happy. I'd love to talk with you, Mike, and others about this because I've given a lot of thought. I was curious, though, as to the existing cottage residential, especially along Cedar Falls Way, what city park was envisioned to be used for the people there? I think it's a really important consideration. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there, and that would be one of my concerns. Is people are kind of abusing Ofsted, and it's not a city park; it's overloaded. So. What's the intent for a city park?
Yeah, we do need a city park in that area of town. So we've heard that from a lot of the community. I think we've got a policy in the parks element that talks about distribute city parks evenly throughout the city. We don't have a specific site. We do have the new city hall proposal that'll include a lot of open space and some trails around the stormwater pond and so forth that'll have some kind of park function. It's hard to pinpoint a property and say that's the city park and we want that, unless you're planning to buy it. Because
unless it be a city park, could it be a park? Because Tanner Landing Park, the county park,
a new park that'll go in a little east of there.
It's crossing North Fenway, though.
Each of these projects, though, any residential development contributes to park impact fees, which go to improving park facilities and acquiring parks so that we maintain that overall level of service to residents as development occurs.
I would encourage you to keep lobbying for it because I've worked for several communities and this is a park-friendly community, believe me. And
yeah.
If you continue to push for that, my guess is you're going to get a park out.
Well, I would suggest that maybe one is needed in the middle of that CR zone there might be. I know there's talk about the trail to meander through the public works area. Maybe there's some thoughts there. Please preserve the trees. I did have one puff ball for you, actually, real simple question. Since you mentioned that this was adopted in Kirkland, can you give us some addresses so we can kind of drive
actually,
by and take a
this
look?
Website right here.
Okay.
So let me show you a couple of them. So again, this was based on the Kirkland cottage regulations. And the Kirkland cottage regulations were developed specifically with the cottage company. That's this developer. who became famous for doing really well done cottage developments.
I'm just curious where they are. It was really
Yeah, I mean,
you know, I'm willing to be very creative. I'd love to just see an example of them.
Yeah.
Going to an open house is a good idea so you can see what they're like.
Here, I'll show you one exactly. My screen is
not showing. I did a little search myself, Michael. If you go to the cottage company on online, they're promoting them pretty heavily, and they'll show you where they are.
Yeah, I was just curious as to where they are. So
there
like,
we go.
I'm a kind of guy who loves to drive around.
They've got the for sale list up on the upper left. There's a link that you can get to the for sale, and it'll show you which ones.
Anderson Grove is in purple.
That was nine locations
listed
there.
Yeah, if you do the for sale up there, it gives you some of the local ones that you can, the ones that are, I think it was on the current.
Oh, my screen is driving me crazy. How do I reduce that?
I think Michael can figure it out.
Yeah, if you go to the cottage company, you'll see a lot of examples.
I looked because I was curious myself.
They're kind of blended in when you're driving through Kirkland. I drove by one accidentally twice, and it wasn't until I was looking at this for this that I realized that I was driving by. It just...
And that's the beauty
of
it. That
they
blend.
You don't even really notice.
It's kind of, to be honest with you, some of these smaller ones, like a carriage, just as an observation, kind of remind me of, like, mother-in-law suites.
Right.
And by the way, Mr. Ryan, actually, I wanted to let you know there's actually two examples of sort of a carriage type housing already in North Bend. There's a green one at the Tanner Ranger Station. And there's actually an example of one on Cedar Falls Way. There's a yellow one that was built as a second home, which has a two story underneath it. So just give people an idea of what that might look like, even as within North Bend.
When it's not developed with others, it's just considered an accessory dwelling unit, and that's where the primary owner owns that secondary unit on their property and can rent it out to somebody else, but they have to own it. Those are allowed throughout North Bend, and we do have, like the yellow one, a number of other examples throughout the city as well.
Yeah, the other one and the green one at the behind the ranger station, I think, is an example of an interesting carriage house.
So we'll officially close the public hearing here at about 8:07. And Gary, I didn't do so good staying with the timeline, but I think that it was productive. So thank you for taking the time, including those that have left us already. We'll move along to any additional questions from the Planning Commission for staff.
There is a difference. So cottages are allowed throughout the LER zone right now, and you can have up to 15%. But I believe you'd still have to be within the overall density of 4 units per acre for the development as a whole. And this, the change with this is it's more dispersed, and it's more, or it's less dispersed. It's more concentrated within that walk zone. But you could do something that exceeds the 4 units per acre within that cottage cluster of 12.
And we can increase the setbacks for the property line.
That's something that would be up for consideration, yeah.
Any additional questions? Then we can move on to discussion. So, comments? I'm just going to kind of cycle through. Any comments from you, Mr. Lucky? Do we want to go page by page through this?
I'll make some comments, I think, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear that everybody's gone through this whole thing like we do with others. A couple questions, if I can, Mike. So if I'm right, Kirkland doesn't actually have land that is designated a certain zone.
No,
like cottage.
No, they don't have a cottage zone like we do.
So I just wanted to verify the point I had. In my head, this conversation first came before this body back in 2004. First time cottage housing was talked about, and it ran from this meeting over to city council, and all of a sudden it turned into some block of land that was called cottage housing zone. And that totally is wrong, in my opinion, from the way it started. So I think we have a baseline error about the idea that we should designate land as a certain zone called college. I'm thinking the more the better approach, to use Kirkland's example, is you allow the zone to be distributed amongst other zones as an overlay of sorts, and you have specific guidelines that allow it to be used, controls on density, et cetera, et cetera. And then the developer comes in and says, hey, this is a piece of land that I can't build 3 6,000 square foot houses on, but I can build 1,200 foot houses on. And I can make the numbers work. Exactly what they did on 130th in Kirkland, right at the top of the hill as you go over from Redmond into Kirkland, one of their first Kirkland projects. It was, I believe it was a 10-acre piece with about 7 of those 10 acres in slope and wetlands and really unbuildable, but the developer chose to build cottage rather than 2 or 3 mm-hmm. mega houses.
Kind of a transfer of density.
But market controlled it, as opposed to, pardon us, all these folks that are on the payroll with cities and governments, no offense, we haven't got a clue what the market's going to do 6 months ago, much less blocking some land off for future use of a plan. So I'm, as we start this whole process over again for the fourth or fifth time, I have to bring back the point that I think was there in the very beginning. This is not about blocking off a part of town and calling it cottage housing. It's so about creating opportunities for developers to build what we've defined as cottage housing.
So that brings up the question of the overall title of the zone. So right now it's called cottage, but it is allowing those other typologies as well. So is that the right name for the zone, or do you want to call it medium density residential? Or
no, I did make a note in that. I think cottage housing needs to be the term. Mm-hmm. And I get that there are, I don't want to monopolize the meeting here, guys, but this is one of my top 10 all year passion buttons. If it's going to be something called cottage housing, it needs to stay something called cottage housing as we develop the definition, which I think is well defined, particularly because we can pull from a close by city who's had great success with it and say, hey, these guys did a good job, let's just keep doing that. Let's start the road with a new wheel. And the point I just made, I'll reiterate. We are starting over with a new wheel by the fact that we've allocated certain space for this use.
Allocated certain space, but also allow in that block radius. That's kind of the hybrid.
Right, yeah.
John, let me just, I don't understand what you're saying. When I see these smaller type residences, I always think of those infill projects, where maybe in a former time, it was people own large blocks of land, maybe right in the middle of town, they might own a block, they had their own house on it, they built another little house on it, but they still, all of a sudden, after 40 years, there's a market for more homes, and they start adding one home after another. A very good friend of mine's father, German carpenter, built 14 homes all around his property, different years, different styles, and when he got done, he had kind of a funky look to it. I mean, it was really different. It was clearly a family environment. Didn't have the same year tagged on to all 14 homes. They were built over a 20-year period.
Yep.
And they were large, small, not tiny, but my point was, I see these smaller homes being used for in-built wherever there's this possibility for going high density, which is usually inside the downtown core. Mm-hmm. And where there's maybe older buildings that were maybe merchant buildings that are empty and not being used, they can be converted into, you know, whatever. Add different facades to make them look like homes, make them look like a neighborhood contributor. Yeah, I don't see a block of land, right, as being cottage homes, all cottage homes, as being anything anybody wants to see. We visualize, you look at the street, you know, these are different style homes, these are all different. They aren't the same. Mm-hmm. They're eightplexes, twoplexes, fourplexes, variety of homes in a neighborhood. makes it look good to me is that they all were built in different periods of time, which gives it character. So I don't see putting a whole new community of cottage homes and thinking that city council or neighbors are going to like it. It's going to look like it's another uniform development.
And that's the whole purpose of the cluster idea. So no more than 12 per cluster, separated by a buffer, and then beyond that, separated by conventional single-family size.
But I'm saying I think that I'd rather just shuffle the deck rather having a stack of hearts over here and a stack of diamonds over here, shuffle it and put a single-family home up against the cluster, up around a duplex, and keep doing that. And provide clear, distinctive looks within the neighborhood. Well, about a year ago, I mentioned I grew up in a neighborhood where there was very rich people, and they built their orange orchards to build houses. I lived near those rich people, and I went to the neighborhood. I'd like to be rich, but I lived in a small home. But it was good that I had that life experience, the big homes, small homes, whatever we could afford, we had. But I see there are possibilities out there in my life, and we all didn't have the same home. And for me as a kid, that was interesting. I didn't realize if I got to be an adult that how interesting that really was. So, it's not what we're looking for. I keep hearing Councilman Patterson talk about a variety of homes. I think that's what she's talking about. I think the other members in the council have seen that. I'm trying to bring that back.
I'm trying to think of how we achieved that. I think that maybe the major difference is how homes were sold back in before the World War II era. There wasn't subdivision as much as there was individual lots that people would buy. And so they'd build their lot, they'd build their house, it'd be very different from the house next to it.
Yes.
So it's just a different market today where massive home builders come in and do a project. And they want to do a large project for economies of scale, and so it just winds up with a very different feel.
It's called financing.
Yeah.
That's what's changed.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to 1950, that wouldn't happen.
Well, I'm kind of new to this too, this whole cottage thing. When I looked at it, I think when I was talking with Lynn and Mike about it, they perceived that there would be two kinds of product that would come in. One of them would just be infill. And you've got some of them happening in the downtown now where there's maybe three or five because you have and the housing types are a lot closer to the smaller square footages that were built historically in the downtown, so it kind of works pretty well. Then the other type of experience was where someone would come in and they would want to master plan a community around a green and do a number of these products. Now, we can differentiate the architecture. I mean, if you thought in the cottage zone, you want to see a widely differentiated style of architecture, so you would have this sort of feeling that there were, even if it's, duplexes next to single cottages, or just architecturally burying them, you have the ability to recommend that when somebody comes in with a master plan community. Now, a couple of them I've seen in Kirkland, I think, have been done very well as communities around a green, and I've seen it elsewhere. And I've seen it also in some of the senior communities in California where they're trying to create a walkable environment where people have a very active lifestyle and they don't feel like they're in a place where they've gotten shoved out of the mainstream. So as you think about it, it is a difficult problem for a place like North Bend because we've got a fairly low density and you've got a real wide variety in the age of homes in the era in which they were built. And to tell you the truth, when I look at some of the new developments here, it doesn't do much for me either. So I'm struggling just as you are. My background's in architecture.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the ability as a planning commission to say the kind of built environment we want at the end of the day needs to look like this. I think the infill is a fairly easy issue for us to deal with. What's more difficult is when a developer wants to come in and build this housing type in a community, where is it appropriate? How would you like it to look? Would you mandate that it be around another level of space? Would you mandate design guidelines and things that will give you a product that you can visualize will happen because you've set those standards in place? And if you don't like the way it's laid out, and I get your point that you're making, Jim, about, you know, you don't want to just zone large parcels of land for this because it's not appropriate for this housing type. And if that's the case, and if that's the consensus, then, I mean, I don't mind tabula rasa, you know, wipe it off and say, okay, here's what we're going to do when we use these in infill and how it would work well in infill. But if people are going to propose them in a community, what are the standards that you, the Planning Commission, would like to see? And if you'd like to use them as a viable alternative for property that has wetlands and steep slopes, or you want to preserve a forested area, but you still want to get the yield out of the property, then I think you're looking at the cottage product and solving a different problem than just taking land and, you know, taking the trees down and building something new.
And so that actually goes back to what's the current model of that planned neighborhood development throughout the Arizona. But the land with the 15%, that's a different situation.
But you have the ability, if those are the directions you want to go, to fashion those directions and design them the way you want them to be. We're bringing you something that's fashioned from Kirkland. Maybe one size doesn't fit all, it doesn't work. But we'd like to, you know, articulate what you want.
I want to let everyone else make a comment, and then I have something to say that's in this vein so that I don't come back to it. Did you have something?
I got. I on purpose got lost up at the uplands the other day. Maybe we could go looking for diversity. I found it. You know how in the uplands they got that retail, mm-hmm. medical, all in one main drag?
Yeah.
Right behind it is exactly what we're looking for. You know, they're variety of sizes, variety of fronts, very narrow streets, though. Very narrow streets, and little parking, and little private parking like a garage. That's a problem. I can see that people are playing car tag all the time trying to find a parking spot, but it's extremely dense. The shops are thriving. The movie theater's thriving. It's a you don't have to leave that hill once you're home. It's got everything there. And in our plan, we have neighborhood business in most of these pockets. And I think we're trying to find a way to mimic what Biscoe Highlands is all about. Maybe our scale is too small, but we're talking about a fairly interesting commercial on the Tanner piece. We're thinking about something commercial here on the 436th, I think, somewhere along that area. Those pocket businesses are what ties the homes together. I see people eating there, doing what we would normally do inside our house. They're doing them outside in these restaurants. It's their lifestyle. It's living on the sidewalk and living upstairs somewhere.
And I think that was one of the ideas of that 10-minute walk radius, yeah. is to have that relationship with the downtown. You do need some higher densities to support that type yeah. of growth, to support the number of people that you need for a restaurant and the street life and so forth.
But there are a lot of trees up there that left. And they left that with a, that was a, Fort Blake ownership,
yeah.
But they were a timber company. They had a manual forest up there. They just took it out and built that community up there. And I think they did a damn good job.
There's a lot of example cottage product up there. So mm-hmm. cottages, the two-unit homes, mm-hmm. the carriage units, they're all represented up there.
Mm-hmm. Mark Rico's was the part of that project.
Oh, okay.
So There's five things on my list, Dick, and I want to chime in on one. Biscoe Highlands, I've watched that from Bear Dirt, too. And to me, there's some great pieces to it, but the overall piece of it is that's what happens when city council decides where they're going to put density. They cut a deal with a timber company, put it all in one place. They plan it out over 20, 30 years, and people choose what they can from what's available. And so, to me, that fits in exactly with the concept that happened here with Cottage Zone. City planner said, hey, let's create a zone. Oh, that's a great idea. And they debated it, and they allocated land for it. But that's missing the real root of the value of the product, the idea, which is, and I'll come back to this in a second. But if you think about what's happened, and you talked about it earlier, financing has driven a huge part of what people build. If you don't have the cost per foot that matches up with what you want to spend for your expensive kitchen, you can't get a loan. So the cottage housing contrary to the idea cottage housing is affordable housing. It's totally not, in my mind. It's the opposite of that. Cottage housing represents the change where people said, you know, I'm not going to build a bonus room and two extra bedrooms that I don't need just so I can have a nice kitchen and get a loan for buying the house. That's really what's happened. If you look around and you go knocking on doors, people aren't using half of the square footage that they own. And the only real reason they do is because they needed to get a loan in the first place. Somebody along the way needed to do that. So the builders are building to the financing options rather than building to the needs of the people who are actually looking to buy a house.
You're right, and I never thought of that.
So we've fallen victim to that same story by saying, let's just paintbrush some land and call it a zone. So this concept will start showing up there. Well, it doesn't work because my grandmother, who frankly still lives, is not going to travel from the current cottage housing zone to the grocery store or anywhere else because it's too far away. 10 minutes walk is an hour for her. To use the bubble we've created, the 10-minute walk. Well, who's walking here? Do I have a walker or am I moving like I might when I was 22? So there's a lot of anomalies that I'm just thinking about around this zone, because to me it's the only thing that we're doing as a city that says I'm acknowledging the change in demographics. I'm acknowledging the change in that same group of demographic folks, that same group of folks that are my age and older, are starting to write checks for their accommodation. They're not going to the bank anymore. They want smaller square footage. They want quality. They want to have room for some people to spend the night, but they want to be able to walk to things, and they don't want to be in a 5-story Issaquah Highlands apartment building for the same money. So I just hope that we'll keep thinking about it that way. I know that's how the conversation started in 2003, 4 or so, and I want to do what I can to bring it back on track.
Jim, you are making an argument for the product, just not in the largely zoned area.
It's a bad idea to put it out of town. That's not in town. The zone that we have allocated is not in town. Driving through town.
It is, however, largely across the street from a lot of neighborhood business zone, which is intended for that.
Well, again, the zone doesn't dictate the use. Mm-hmm. It just restricts the use. We can say we want an airport zone over here, and there's probably not going to be one anytime soon. So it's the process that we've got. We've got a totally unique city, bounded by two rivers and a freeway and mountains and all kinds of crazy stuff that nobody else to deal with. The other point I'd make that has always bothered me when I saw the product that resulted from the swath of paintbrush we used, two very credible builders, developers came in when times were kind of hard and they were the only ones that could write the check to buy the land to start the building process, and the city council said, oh my God, that's not what we want. We need a moratorium all of a sudden. They just followed the rules we set out for them, and the city council said that was a screw up. They stopped the train, and here we are today. So it's not working, evidenced by what's been tried with a lot of money invested. The market's absorbed the product, but that's not the cottage home owner. It's the push up the ceiling to make it 2,500 square feet and build it out over the top of the garage. It's kind of a funky shape, but
that's what we're here for.
It morphed away from the cottage.
Totally. Totally. Can I make one more caveat meeting? By the way, I've been asking for this meeting for 3 years. I have. So one other thing, everybody talks about affordable housing. It's like this politically hot button, and I'm going to call, pardon my French, I won't even use the word. It starts with B. Everybody's probably heard of the butterfly effect, where if you throw a pebble in the stream, it kind of goes off, or out in the river, or out in the lake, it never stops. It just keeps going. It gets bigger and bigger. The ripple's bigger. Same thing's true here. When you lay a rule on a piece of land, it raises the end cost exponentially. Every time you lay a regulation over a land use, it makes the function and the use of the land more expensive. And the more the layers change and get added on, the more and more expensive the land gets. So all of these folks, including myself, who sit here and think about, we need to figure out a way to have affordable housing. Well, the BS in the story is, why are we keep making rules for the land use? That's the thing that's making it more expensive. It's not anything else. The market's going to pay what the market's going to pay. The banks are going to lend what the banks are going to lend for people to borrow. We are the ones who are increasing the cost of the land by creating more regulation and more fees and more structures on top of the land before any building can even be started to thought about. So as we go through all of this, cottage housing and others, we're the ones making land too expensive and raising the cost of the actual end product for the home, which people can't quote afford.
There is a definite cost to the level of design.
It's exponential.
Particularly with the cottage product, you can go very awry. There was a number of examples in Shoreline and other cities that they didn't have very well thought out cottage standards, and the product really turned out awful.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the sake of the existing neighborhoods, the character of the city,
yeah,
I believe that design standards are pretty important.
Yep. Yep. I do too. I just want to overlay that with our conversation around affordable housing.
Yeah.
Because I think we're the ones that are making it unaffordable.
Yeah. Well, also, cottages may not be an affordable choice on a per square foot basis.
Agreed.
But like you said, they are an alternative to buying a conventional home that's much larger than you.
Sure.
So that's
totally. And there's a shift happening. I mean, it's a big shift. You know, the fact that folks are starting families later, that they have been paying a two-income family to live in their condo in downtown Seattle that they just sold for $800,000, and now they're going to come out here and buy a nice house for $750. That's the real numbers today. That's what's happening. Those folks still haven't had kids yet, so they're just buying a house because that's what's available for the money they've got. So anyway, I think that's all. Those are my big buttons. There's a lot of little stuff here as I go through this. Apologize for monopolizing the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good to go high level, and then we can kind of get into it. So kind of some of my high levels that I wrote down relate to some of the setbacks. And I kind of circled the areas within the document. That's what gets difficult. I have kind of things that I'm interested in. It's like, where is it in here? So I've kind of found those areas. Looking at the dwelling units per acre, looking at the common green space. I haven't found that yet in the document, actually. The size requirements we've talked about, the square footage, continuing that discussion, the spacing between the cottages, and you know within the zone, the buffer from Cedar Falls Way, and it, just in general, I think if we kick that back, something like what Wood River has, you wouldn't even know anything was in there, and I think that that's a good way to screen the whole thing. You know, and then
the challenge with it is, and I totally get that, I'd love to have a 50-foot buffer. It's how much can you ask for before it becomes a taking? So at some point, you're making the development can't cancel because you're asking for so much that you're going to get in trouble. So it's always difficult finding what that line is.
And maybe it's a staggered thing. That's kind of the way the drawing is at this time. And picking up those areas that have existing large trees.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other areas where there's not any trees at all. So maybe we skinny it up at that point. Maybe that diversity is fine anyway. But those are some high level things that I'd like to go through the document a little bit more and talk about.
I might force us to practice of letting the developer buy off a tree. You know, it makes the point that I could use that space to $5,000, whatever the going price is for a non-dominant tree. We've got to stop that practice because they can't plant anything better than what's out there. And those conventions, you see how they set properties on a piece of ground that they have to sort of jack them around so they have this all lined up in a straight line.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely want to bring the tree regulations to you guys soon.
Yeah.
So from a high level area, because this is one of the things as I started going through this, I took a lot of time because for a while I was not wrapping my head around that we were actually talking about not cottages in general, but developments. Because cottages are, the whole cottage kind of carriage house is what sent me down the path of those are ADUs by another name. And you see the same thing when you look at the websites that were included, particularly the missing middle. And a lot of what we're talking about are essentially ADUs, which circled me back to something that I think I thought the first time we were looking at our beautiful orange on the map. We're trying to artificially create something that often happens over 50 years, 75 years, 100 years
as
in the community.
Densify, yeah.
That we're trying to essentially create that in code in these orange areas. I see that, and when I did this, I'm sitting there thinking about my family property in Silver Creek that started out as a really large lot with a house and a barn and a giant shop. First they cut off a little bit of land for my uncle to build his house. Then, as I got older, my grandparents sold some land to a developer, interestingly enough, because they couldn't manage to get it through. They were going to build it themselves, and then got frustrated trying to work to get it done, and ended up selling it to someone who built, I think, about four houses on it. And they were done over time, so you have this different look. So what we're trying to do with this orange zone is essentially create that from the ground in an artificial way, and I think that's probably what we all keep running up against when you're trying to wrap your head around it and how to express it correctly. That how do you take that and make it from you and not end up with everything looking the same? And how do we connect it to, you know, say the lady that has a one-story house in Silver Creek that wants to build a carriage house so that she can rent one out and make some money? Or because she wants to stay in her home and wants the grandkid who's going to be keeping an eye on her to actually have an independent place to live. And I don't think we can separate them and come up with a way that works coherently for the whole city, if that makes sense.
The carriage house is a separate issue, though.
Yeah.
It's allowed throughout the city.
Right. Yeah. But for any of the ADU units, even whether it was a carriage house or someone building another mother-in-law that was attached or another detached structure, we get into this mix that we're trying to create that is part of this cottage zone as well. Because it's the cottage zone is essentially us taking that idea and trying to force the shape of it in a specific space. So I was starting increasingly having trouble wrapping my head around that without us looking at it as a city-wide issue. So hearing this from others, I think, fits with where I was headed.
Do you think it would be worthwhile? Because it's a hard concept, particularly in the really the set of conditions that, Jim, you described very quickly, very well, with the mountains and the rivers and the different kinds of housing types that are here. Do you think it would be, and I would probably get them to do it, if we could get somebody from the cottage company to actually come down to the Planning Commission and say, this is what we had in mind, and this is what we do, and this is why we do it, and because it may give us some clues as to maybe the concept of having it distributed throughout the community isn't such a bad idea. And you want to make sure that you get a quality development with certain things in it that you as a Planning Commission want to see before you can say, okay, we would allow that to happen in 12 units or whatever the, you know, maximum number is if you do it in this fashion and you set those standards for what that fashion would be. Because you're going to get people to come in that want to do a smaller unit development. And you're in a position to set the standards so that when it's done, you can say that was worth doing, it's a good project, or, my God, why did we allow them to do it? And maybe the answer isn't to some large areas. I'm not sure that is or isn't. But it would be kind of nice to hear from the people who invented the concept and pulled it off successfully, and maybe even get a hold of the people who did the project up in the Highlands and say, could you come in and could we have some...
So the cottage company did come and present. They came and presented at a council work study, and I don't know if they presented to the Planning Commission. I wasn't involved.
I think
in
that we actually asked about that possibility a couple of times, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, I think that may have been just when they the council was formulating their initial direction on this.
You know, when King County was in the building business, I relied upon that must be compatible with existing community. And that's what Seattle's gotten away from. You see, Seattle, they're just building these crazy three-story, high-pitched homes between two old 1920s stucco homes. You know, this whatever any builder can squeeze in, they do, and it just looks like Jesus. You know, I'm not talking about that kind of deal. It's got to be compatible with the overall community where it's going. It can't just come in with some crazy feature just to make a statement.
But my question would be is how do we do that? Because a cottage, I'm just thinking about the differences in styles. You know, downtown we have primarily early 1900s houses, 1920s. When you go to Silver Creek, you have construction styles that are 1950s to 1960s, a few in the 1980s. So we have different kind of micro communities throughout the city that would have a very different feel. And then it becomes again, thinking of every layer that you put on there makes it more expensive. How do we put that into code in such a way, other than just saying it must be compatible with community, because there's a lot of leeway with that one. Hey, we painted them all green and there's a house across the street that's green. How do you avoid that kind of thing? Because if we allow it, you don't want them to come in and for it to look cookie cutter.
Well, there are a lot of standards. I just looked through your design regulations here today, and there are a lot of standards you have now that define the kind of articulation and, mm-hmm. and if you will, the fine grained detail that you'd like to see to have a quality house mm-hmm. instead of untreated sides. And you have some language about styles and about having a variety, but having a theme. So that, I think there are things that you can do mm-hmm. to encourage that and still leave the creativity of the architect and the designer to do it. But I think there are basically two types of this cottage housing that you're going to see, and this relates to that. One is the infill in the downtown where you have smaller lots, and the other is a planned community. So when you think about it, you might think about it in those two contexts. What would you like to recommend for the downtown area that does reflect maybe a style and a time or compatibility with that particular time? And then if somebody were to come in and want to do a cottage project in a smaller plat, how would you like to see it done? And maybe it's not a matter of just zoning, it's a matter of allowing it, whether it's an overlay or whatever you want to call it. But I think what we're trying to get to is the housing tax coming to us. And if it comes to us, how do you as a planning commission want it to be received, and how do you want to not necessarily regulate to get what you want, but to make sure you don't get what you don't want. You get what you don't get the bad product. Mm-hmm. How do you avoid the bad product? Because really that's what we look forward to. If people want to come in and do the most expedient thing, and they're going to do a cottage product that you wouldn't want to see, how do you put those standards in place to ensure that doesn't happen? And that's really where we're trying to guide this. And it is a new type of product. It's not something we've seen a lot of. And so if people are going to come to us with it, how would you receive it as a planning commission? How would you want to see it delivered to you as a product that's built in your community?
Well, I think we've just about got that part covered.
Yeah.
How does it look? We're real close to how does it look. Where is it is the piece that I think is gray. Where is it proximity to the things we think are important? Is it more important to have this product near a park, or is it more important to have this product near the city for shopping and maybe transit or something else is factored in?
I guess I'm curious what your thought is. If you don't want cottage here kind of the way that this picture is, would you rather that just be all LDR then?
Well, to answer that question, yes, because LDR allows cottage housing.
It does. I don't know if I agree with you totally, because we have so much LDR already.
Right.
And we may have to force the issue a little bit. And I guess I would say that there were the two, that there were different regulations, but we had two cottage developments that are still in the process of being built that went really quick, it seemed like.
Well, they did.
These are different because these are, I think they were both bare land, raw land.
Yep.
So
flat, like a pancake.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's flat in the Cedar Falls area, but they have existing homes on them, so it's complicated. I mean, you have to have a willing seller, you have to demo and kind of work the land in that way.
That is naturally going to preserve a little bit of that diversity and that incremental change over time. These are not large tracts
right.
of land.
That's
so it is,
once.
Somebody could come in and buy up several properties, but that's often difficult to do. So you've got to have the right willing sellers all across the row.
To focus the thought I'm having, if you take LDR, an any part of town, and I mean, it's yellow, man. It's all over town.
Mm-hmm.
Most of what we have.
Yeah.
And you say, if you build this product, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, you're going to get a little better density for the developer's perspective. You're going to have a few more units. Would you say that's true?
I didn't follow you.
If you take, you're going to go build the cottage housing product as we currently have it designed mm-hmm. or laid out, and you're going to do that in LDR, you're going to be able to build a few more units.
A few more units at
in the same space.
Scale in the same space.
So from the perspective that I have, thinking about the city and taking care of its people, I say, well, it's a decent trade because what I've done is allow the developer to come in wherever they want to come in, anywhere it's LDR and high density, and et cetera, and say, you know what? If you're going to build this product, we're going to give you a little more opportunity to build a unit or two more, which that's really what matters. If you ask any plot builder, they'll say, you know, all my profit out of 50 houses was in the last five. That the dance works out that way in some capacity. So I think it's a great trade for us to say, we're not going to constrict you into this particular zone called cottage housing. We're going to allow you to build this product throughout the city, and in areas where you go to LDR, for example, you actually get a few more units than you would otherwise. So there's an incentive to do it there.
Yeah, and so if there's not a requirement, then we're not going to necessarily see it. You'd just be hoping for the developer.
And there's a part of me that says that's fine.
I don't think that's okay. I like the way we're going with it. I like the smaller sizes, and I think that that will be more affordable. Will it be affordable housing? No, I agree with you on that.
Yep.
But having some of those carriage units, I think, are really good. The two-unit homes, I like that. And we can we're opening it up to these other zones,
right,
as you're saying.
Right.
But I think if we don't kind of force the issue, we may not see it. And I think I think people want to see it and not just hope to possibly see it.
And the other thing is, you may not get more units. Because if you're going to want this to be a community that's designed around an open space, like a lot of them we've seen on these graphics, you may end up with the same density but a different kind of environment. And it's the environment people are buying. And you're right, it's not affordable housing. It's the high-end finishes. It's the social atmosphere.
Yep.
It's not having to maintain a large piece of property. But the people buy it for the atmosphere. People, you know, we heard from people today, and I understand the sentiment because I kind of have it. I don't want people that close to me, but some people do.
Right.
They want the social interaction.
So,
and they want to be able to have the kind of neighborhood watch that happens when you're around a common open space and all the eyes are out on the property. So you may not end up with more density, but you end up with a different lifestyle, a different living environment.
And forcing the issue is really an important topic to talk about, and that's the missing middle website. So if you didn't have a chance to look at that, take a look at that in the link of the packet, because it's talking about exactly that issue, that the paradigms that we have in the market with the national home builders and the lending and everything just force big homes, and providing an alternative to that via zoning forces the issue. It forces us to meet an unmet need in the market.
I'll just put it out. People have figured this out about me already. I've been in the real estate game for, I guess you call it, three generations. Grandpa, Dad, and me. And I can't, and I've never seen a single place, broad statement, where it's called affordable housing, or it's called, and I'll no disrespect to the process, Habitat for Humanity. All the places that I've been where people are given a discount in some passion for the place that they live, they don't take care of it. And they depreciate the value of everything around them. And I think we do a disservice to the folks by creating a discount environment because they don't know what to do with it. I would rather say, if I couldn't afford to live at a certain location, I need to figure out a way to make more money, do a different lifestyle choice, go to Ohio, do whatever I have to do. It's not up to the location where I live to figure out a way to make me afford where I can be. So there's a huge, I'm not sure I'm going to get over that. But the idea that a government entity is going to solve the problem of affordability is back ass words. It's
not affordability.
You're halfway. I think you're halfway there. You go to the Habitat for Humanity on the ridge, and that little out of sight pocket, it doesn't look like the kids, and they're happy.
And I'm not about the families. I mean, I'll love them. It's about the concept of where does it go from there? It doesn't.
That's
statistics.
All,
I know
that's about
philosophical here stuff here, but that I keep getting the vibe from folks who are in this place that we're supposed to create affordable housing. You don't do that without giving somebody something that's not market value and taking it away from somebody else, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, I want to be clear. This proposal is not about affordable housing,
it's
but it's
about
alternatives.
Five different times.
It's a part of the response to the challenge of housing affordability, but it's not affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I don't think there's much of the risk you mentioned in this area. I think it would probably be an HDR, maybe, where you get some of that situation you're talking about.
It's more diversity of price because it all comes down to price per square foot.
Yep.
The only way you can reach affordability without a subsidy is to build a smaller unit on less land. And that's what this does give an opportunity to do, and that gets reflected quite often in higher finishes and things that raise the price up again. But it still gives a different choice to people. And there is a great market demand for empty nesters and early first-time buyers in the market to get something they can start with in an environment that's attractive.
Yep.
And that may be more affordable than other choices, but it doesn't make it affordable in the traditional sense.
Right. Yeah, and I even had another talk about the carriage house concept. There are examples of thousands of those where, you know, and Dick, to your point of the wealthy folks subdivided and sold off their parcels and whatever else, that's the way it works naturally, where grandma's got a garage in the back that she spends an extra little money and improves it, turns it into an apartment. All of a sudden, grandma's got a little cash flow coming in, and the person living there is like, there is no way I could afford to be here without that. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the nature of things. It's not designed communities so folks can afford it. Sorry, I'll get off my soapbox.
Well, in terms of proceeding with this, I think what would be a good idea is to maybe with fresh eyes come back and look at it with the comments we've had tonight and try, and we can, if we can put those together in the minutes for the other commissioners and maybe have a little communication going out saying we're going to revisit it, but here's some of the highlights of what people would like to see and try to give a little bit of direction from the, there's been a lot of comments that have gone in different directions. And maybe try to give a little bit of direction in the form of maybe several questions or several comments on the content of this, saying it looks like things that deal with design and the product are fairly solid, that the issues that remain is where are they appropriate in terms of do you zone for it, and if you do, where is it most appropriate? Do you agree with the 10-minute? Do you think it ought to be fine? Do you think that this product should be available in the single-family zones as well as a place that it's zoned? Do you think that the diagram that we've shown you is a viable diagram or not? We get some very pointed questions that you can answer that either reinforce what's already in here or replaces it with something else that you think is perfect. I mean, at least if I were to move forward, I'd want to keep what we like and change what we don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like with the density on these units, to use FireWise concepts for a good place to do that.
FireWise is presuming that you're keeping trees away from the structure, though.
Yeah, trees and brush, yeah.
That doesn't really work on a higher density site, just because you wind up killing all the, or getting rid of all the trees.
Yeah.
So there's just trade-offs.
Yeah,
I think, but also in that you're urban, this is the urban context, it's not in the edges of the city, it's less likely that you have a wildfire coming through.
Really? Not for the whole of Santa Rosa.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's insane.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely an anomaly, and it's something that you really have to look at.
I'm thinking of two things that right now. First of all, I apologize for monopolizing so much high energy here. And then, as we finish tonight, I'm actually concerned we won't see it again real soon.
No, we're going to bring it back. We're going to keep on it until it gets done.
You're not going to see me next week. I'm actually going to be in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Good timing.
Probably get some kind of cottage house.
certainly can do that.
Okay.
We certainly can do that.
And I'll be back after that and can continue.
And whether we put it together and keep it within the context of when you're back, or whether we bring it right back, we're going to stay on until it gets done. Because
right back is preferable because people remember what we said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we need to exit the moratorium. That's the highest goal.
Yeah, we have indicated to the city administrator, the mayor, and the council that we get in a really vulnerable position when these moratoriums go on past. You can extend it once, but if you extend it twice, you're asking for a lawsuit. You extend it three times, you're darn well going to get one. So we are going to finish these things under the moratoriums and arrive at a vision and a direction that we all agree on. We're going to move forward with it. So that's our commitment to you.
If it pleases the chair, I don't mind going promptly page to page. Is that something we can do? And maybe put a time limit on it?
Well, we're coming up on 9, so I want to open this up because we do have one other thing that I think they wanted to at least give us a commentary on a summary of the upcoming items. Do you want to quickly go through to the other commissioners, page by page, and call out any specific items so that it can be included in?
What's our estimated time?
I heard Dave was talking about doing the detail.
At the next meeting.
Yeah.
And I think you're missing some members that could help as well in the discussion.
Additional comments.
And what would help us is if you have comments that you currently have, if you want to give those to me, I'll summarize those and distribute them with the packet next time, and everybody's got them.
Also, take a look at the comments that were received written from the public. There's some really good points in there that need to be considered.
Okay.
I guess just a couple of just comments that I drove through the two cottages today, the I don't know if it's the John Day one and then the Ranger, and just to get an idea of, I think everyone could probably drive in there and see something they don't want to see. The Ranger one, basically so far the green space I see are like stormwater retention ponds.
They just haven't finished those yet. Those will be finished, but like common greens with landscaping
on the outsides of the pond or something.
Not the stormwater ponds, but they haven't. You don't see it yet.
Yeah.
But there's alleys.
Just
and
something we can
improve
on. I'm sure there'll be something in there.
Yeah.
And then on the other one, the John Day one, there's like a little strip of grass. It looks like a little putting green or something. And there's like three benches and a table that take up almost as much space as the grass. So those are just things that that's why I was just curious as I do my review for the next meeting, is there somewhere in here that talks about a common green space requirement?
There is, yeah.
What page is that?
It's the square footage per unit.
Okay. And then that adds up compared to the number of units. Is that page 16 on an open space? M?
Yeah, okay. 136 per square foot.
So that would be the number to modify if we wanted more open space.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing you want to think about is one thing to provide a square footage per unit. It's another thing to say, how is that to be organized?
Yeah.
If you want the units to be organized around one large common open space, we should say so.
Yeah, so that is what pictures we've seen in Kirkland.
Yeah.
Maybe we could articulate
general,
that more clearly.
Like it where there's like, it's an interior, you know, I don't know the exact layout, but this probably isn't quite right, but if the road is on the outside, I don't know, you walk to one entrance, and then you go through your house, and then you're on like a patio area, and that's where, you know, your neighbors are here, and you can see everyone. You're close. It's that kind of community, but you have a grass area.
Yeah, and that's what this describes. So it describes that the units are oriented around that common green and that it is a common space. You can't break that up into the little stormwater pond over here and little leftover space over here. It's a common green.
Well, since it's going to be a homeowners association, at some point they'll put a big pool in the middle of that green.
Can I, at the risk of saying this five times, the history piece might be worth hearing a little bit about. So I believe, from what I've studied, the cottage housing is derivative of what used to be called, maybe still is today, co-housing. And co-housing was truly a shared kitchen. The common green was not just a place to look at the birds, it was where you planted your garden, that you ate food from the common green. So back in the days, and I believe this would be, call it European, Danish, World War II, in between there and World War I, people lived like this, and that's how they lived. And the evolution came in our country. If you think about Berkeley and places down in, we call it the Hippieville, if I may, they lived that way because it was kind of cool, communal style living. And the next iteration was, I think, what we're talking about, the cottage housing concept, which has appealed to the same people who were familiar with the communal housing I just described when they were 20. Now those folks are 60 and older, and they're saying, hey, I like this, living with my neighbors, and there's maybe the grandkids come over, and the communal house has been converted from a community kitchen to kind of a party place. There may be a kitchen in, but it's usually a place to hang out, maybe a meeting room for having a homeowner association meetings or rent it out to the neighbors who want to have a party. That's the iterations that I'm aware of.
And the iteration I'm aware of is the post-war era. People coming back to a house full of babies. Everybody went to war, seemed like they had a pregnancy in the family. They came back and all of a sudden you had to start building homes like crazy.
Yep.
They just lined them up like cords of wood, just build as fast as they could with a GI Bill.
Yep.
So they got in early, they got in easy, and that's how we got sort of down this path of everything was the same. It was easy to make, cheap.
Yep. Yep.
And they needed them. But millions of babies, mm-hmm.
Yep.
They needed shelter.
Yep. Yep.
It's also the same thing that you saw us move to where you needed a car. It used to be communities that were built around the town where you could walk everywhere. It was that post-World War II expansion into these suburbs that you start seeing the car, particularly in the West, become a necessity and not an option.
So the hybrid you see from that, I think, now is the kind of thing that cottage house people are doing. They're offering people that lifestyle, but at their current level of income and their current level of comfort, whether it's finishes or the kind of atmosphere that they feel comfortable in today. So it's really morphed from when they were younger to something that's desirable for folks, either as empty nesters or you know, first-time homebuyers.
Yep.
So I think as you look back at this, there are comments that we could go through in detail next time that could kind of materialize that vision that you have into the document. That's what we need. There's some real good comments here and some good observations. And I think it's helping us to re-examine it as well.
Can I ask a specific question? Michael, page 14. Center of the page, max structure size?
Yeah, I've got that note, 1,200, 1,500. That was one of the questions I wanted to come back to you with, you guys.
Just so I'm understanding how that math could work, if I wanted to build a cottage with a carriage unit, am I now at 2,300 square feet for a single family house?
No, the cottage is no more than, whether you decide it's 1,200 or 1,500, the carriage unit is no more than 800. So those are separate. The carriage unit is not an accessory to the cottage. It's a separate owned, separate rented structure.
Is it not connected?
No.
Roof line or something?
No. Just to the garage.
Detached. Okay. Because I could just see somebody coming in
and
buying both.
See, I think
one of
the mistakes that's been made, and you guys have made observations from the product that's been built here. A, it's too much square footage for the lot size, and particularly when you have to raise these up above the floodplain. Secondly, we need to look at the relationship of the second to the first story, because if the second story is the same size, you build a box. So if you don't have roof forms and a smaller second story, you're going to end up with a box. So those are the kind of things you look at to say, I think we made a mistake over here, how do we avoid it? And look at what we could do to make sure that doesn't happen.
I remember talking about the bubble building on the last version where the dimensions were going to create a very awkward shape in a built structure.
And the only other thing, I'm just concerned either I won't be here or we won't have a meeting or something's going to fly by and we're dead zone again for a while. And I'm also concerned, I'll put this on the record, that the city council is going to take the pressure that you've alluded to. We're worried about some person suing us, so we're just going to get this quickly done, which is, I guess, human nature, but it'll be a mistake. Right?
Well, what you just said, I didn't get that.
The comment's been made that there's a lot of energy behind getting us out of moratorium so we don't get sued. And I think that's a mistake. And I don't want the city council to go, well, let's get out of the moratorium somehow, some way, when we haven't had time to
check it. It has to be out of moratorium. Yeah. Well, there's another way to look at it.
Yeah.
If I have a test, I'm going to study for it before I take the test, so I'll get a good grade. So let's study for it.
Yes.
And let's get a good grade.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't mean you have to take a long time.
Yeah,
to get to where you want to get to. In fact, sometimes if you take too long, you end up with a worse product.
I agree. Yeah.
I mean, in general, I like the direction you've taken with it, because I feel like it was difficult for me to stay on track before.
Yep.
We would just jump around, and that's just how it was managed before in general. And it's difficult. So to kind of stay on, to have less topics, especially if they're detailed. Right. And then to just take them to completion.
Stay on task.
Yeah.
I think one of the challenges is that because it came from the council rather than from the bottom up, council was working with staff and there was a lot of different iterations. You guys got the initial draft, council was still providing feedback, and so there was kind of a spin cycle of who's in control. So I think it's more helpful to get all the way through your process of your recommendation and take that to council. So there's a very linear chain of process.
Yeah, it's really our responsibility as staff to try to gel some of these questions and issues and focus this so that you feel like you're making progress in the areas that you're concerned about. And that's what we intend to do.
Yeah, I like some of the comments you've made. Just in general, kind of adding your professional opinion in there. I would recommend continuing to do that. Just because it helps. It's kind of maybe something I was thinking, that was on there with, I don't know if it was.
I have a star beside something, actually, to that effect on page 14, where you had added some comments that were, it's easier to administer this option. And my comment was a big star with easy is good.
Yeah.
That sometimes we make it more difficult and more confusing, I think, for the individuals that are coming to you for these developments by overthinking or making you have to do fractions rather than making it simple.
And a lot of times when you pick something up that's been stale for a while, it feels like you just don't have your arms around it yet. But I think you do, and I think you are focusing on the issues you want us to focus on. And we'll try to make that a little more clear and say, these things we think you're pretty happy with, and these are the things you need to concentrate on. And here were some of the comments that you had and the public had, and this is what your choices are, and then have you kind of take it from there.
Well, I don't like it, but thanks. This comes from the heart. You better realize I need a cataract operation because I cannot read this placa.
I increased the font size of this already.
And I realized I have, when I was exempt, I have a cataract.
Yeah.
I'll be reading this stuff, buddy.
I'm sorry. One of the problems is just the way that Microsoft Word does that when your track changes, it shifts everything over it.
I didn't know I was blind until I had to
read. That's why I read it online.
Yes.
And make notes. That and the fact I don't get my packet as quickly as everybody else does. Field offices in Snoqualmie, so I walk to get my mail from work, right? But it's easier because then you can increase the size to read it once it's big enough. You might find that that's helpful.
Mike, you made a note in those changes on page 11. I believe from our last meeting there was a question around what we're going to actually call this zone.
Yeah.
We call it something that it's not. My answer is it's called cottage alley, cottage zone, or something like that. Not cottage, carriage, and two-unit homes. So
even though it includes those,
I struggle with: is it a two-unit home or is it a cottage? You know, I could come back to that, but I think the name that we're talking about here, if we label it, if that's what you were asking, it's changes that were made. We need to keep the term cottage straight up. not add layers to it. And that's, again, the point I was making earlier. And if we allow to, you know, the carriage house inside the cottage zone, okay, that's explained in the rest of this language. If we allow the two-unit home inside the cottage zone, mm-hmm. well, that's explained in the plan mm-hmm. language. But let's not put a title.
So keep the nomenclature for the total package of cottage housing, and then have those other options available.
If everybody would agree, I'd make the motion to make that change official.
I guess it would be in the permitted uses. Mm-hmm. You know, so it would be like it would be like neighborhood business. We don't list every kind of business that could be in a
Yeah, that's fine. So there was a motion in a second.
Motion by Mr. Leckie to reflect the title of the chapter as cottage residential. Is that correct? Second by Mr. Ryan. All in favor?
Aye.
So we got one of your track changes done. And in the event I'm not here for the next meeting, somebody please carry the torch for me. Thank you.
Okay. So if we want to move to that last item on our agenda so that you guys can get home at some point. Summary of the upcoming Planning Commission review items required municipal code amendments.
Well, here's what I did. Longy had asked me when I first came on board, and these kind of things help me figure out what I'm working with here. How many legislative items do we have in addition to the development load? Because you have long-range planning and current planning development review. Long-range planning is the legislative items, the comp plan, that kind of thing. And so Mike helped me put together a list of those things that we had put that we had on the list. And then the planners helped me prioritize those based upon comments from the council and commission. So what we tried to do for you and the council to let you know, we use this in our budget discussion with them about needing this additional planner. And there was a really heated discussion between council members on whether or not they were going to freeze this docket process in terms of adding things for us to do until we got caught up. And they talked about budget, they talked about workload, and there were different differences of opinion, which you could imagine. But the point is, we once and for all were able to list these and put them all down and to say, we think these are the priorities. And we did put the moratorium up front because they are time sensitive. And so you guys have done a good job by helping us get some of these off the list, but I wanted to show the list to you. And when you can take some time to look at it, we think it's important that you know that we really have a lot of code work to do here. And we're going to try to, you know, power through it and get it done. But we need to be careful about adding code amendments beyond this because it's just beyond our bandwidth to get to it. So we wanted to share this with you and tell you we got our arms around it. And we're going to knock these dominoes over one at a time. And this is what the workload looks like. And just let you know, this is where we're going. Now, if the commission feels collectively that the priorities need to be moved around a little bit, we're open to that. But we wanted a structure and a work program to see how we get through this. And time-wise, I would really like to be taking at least one of these, if not two or three, to the council a month. And you're doing a good job because we're bringing the wireless and we're bringing the overlay zones to them in October. So we're doing okay. And if we can continue to do this, the things that we won't have these comments of when's this going to come back, when are we going to get this done, because you're going to be getting it done. So this is the kind of focus that we'd like to work with you on. And if you think our priorities are a little screwball, let us know and we'll move them around. But this was just an informational item. It's not really for action, but just to let you know what we got on the plate. Well, I think there, to an extent we can, but I think, you know, whenever you take one of these, you've seen what the wireless rewrites and that take. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably more strategic if you just concentrate, like, let's get this cottage thing done and let's move on to the next one. Because you did it very well with a very complicated subject. This wireless thing, given the federal legislation and all that sort of thing, is really difficult. So I think if we're able to knock these down, you know, two a month if we can do it, I think that's great progress. And I think expecting to do more than that's probably overloading you and overloading us. Because y'all have jobs and other things. That's
in 2 months. I got 6 more years to be on this committee.
We got a few done by that.
No, but I'm very encouraged by the way you guys work together. I think we can get a lot of this done.
No, I think this tracking scenario is outstanding.
Yeah, I like having the vision.
There was an occasion we had privy to the capital's budget and when money was getting ready to be allocated and when money was going to be asked for, and that helped us see the light as well. So all information's good.
Mm-hmm. So David alluded to this, but I don't know if you all knew, but the council has recommended for their 2018 budget to hire a two-year planner to help with all of this. So we're really happy about that.
Cool.
And I'm amazed at how many projects each of these guys are carrying in the development arena. And I thought it was, you know, we kind of crescendoed, but we haven't. We're getting a lot more coming in. There are projects that went dead for a while, plats, that other people who have been successful in the community bought, and they're bringing back. So I don't think the development activity is going to slow down for us, and that's why it's so important that if there are regulations that, true, it may add costs, but there are things that you want to protect your community with, and you want to make sure they're in place. And we want to get as many of these in place to apply to those developments as we can.
Okay. So, any other questions or comments? Anything for the good of the order?
Yeah. No, wait. I want to say for the record, Tom, didn't realize until I heard public comments at the last city council meeting that the impression I gave here that at our meeting that there was a backroom deal. There was no backroom deal. If there was, I had no knowledge of it. I just misspoke. What I'm talking about was we were vetting the process, which is what the Dogger family had when 1611A was passed by the council. And when the 1626 came up, obliterating 1611A, that wiped out a vetted process. And I thought vetted process was, I start calling that a deal because I didn't want to use hyphenated terms. But there was no back. You know, I don't know. I'm glad Lonnie picked up on that because certainly she was correct. Its terminology was very important at that point. I was pretty careless with the way I was talking, but I was so disappointed the way that happened that I wasn't using the proper language, so I apologize to the commission for that. But no backroom deal, it was simply the process that was agreed to was trampled upon. Mm-hmm. That was for my anger.
I think I picked up on that word actually at that meeting in agreeing with you, but in my mind it too was reflecting on the fact that there had been a very carefully vetted process that had gone through the entire process for conversation. And more than that, that I think that when the city is trying to have a good relationship with people that are coming to them, particularly when we're working out agreements for transfer of property for parks, for example, that it's really important that whether it's a citizen or a developer who might also be a resident, that they know that they can stand on that, that we're not going to change with the wind.
Negotiating in good faith.
Thank you. That's precisely what I was headed for with that. But I did also pick up on that. I didn't even think about how deal would be perceived by people who were listening to that. It's easy, I think, to jump on a rather cynical take sometimes, and mm-hmm. we may have mutually assisted that by the vocabulary that was chosen.
So I take responsibility for that. But so I got that on my chest.
But at the same time, I think you brought up a very, very important point that was good to hear in the public process.
I listened to the comments as well, and I just think what I didn't hear from people was that the project was vested to that 1611A. So it's not like me as a person wouldn't want less buildings and a more rural character. I mean, of course, that's what I want. But It's just that's where the project is vested as well. And so I just don't know if that's if people really understand that and got that.
I think it's a continual challenge for us. And quite seriously, it's about when we reach out to, for example, there have been mentions before about bringing different big businesses out here for their employee part or area, you know, bring their headquarters out. If they're hearing in the wind that, well, you might get an agreement, but then they're going to change zoning on you, and then if something happened, you might not be able to get what you had. That I think it dissuades people from being willing to come out here and work with the community, and it creates a reputation. You know, if I went with what North Bend looked like when my grandparents first built their house here, there are a lot of people in the room that wouldn't be in a house right now, and a lot of the people listening that wouldn't be. There were orchards around them at the time, and they ran cattle to the river from their house down 6th Street. I do think that we are predisposed to look for the cynical interpretation sometimes of things that are going on. But this is really about making sure that if we are trying to do things for the city, that you don't have really great opportunities running in the other direction because we were giving the impression that we change with the wind. So. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for sticking it out. We'll close the meeting at, 9:23? I'm not that far off the 9 o'clock.
Just for the sake of Robert's rules, do you want to have a motion?
Oh, do we have, sorry.
You do.
You know what? Can you tell I'm ready to go home? Do I have a motion to?
Yes, you do.
Second. So, motion by Jim, and a second by Scott. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Well done.
Not enough caffeine.